Hello and welcome to episode 3. Today I've got Pauline Mazurel.
Yes.
but we're going to call her Mazzy now because it's easier and it's that's your preferred name anyway.
It's maybe what most people know me as, okay. But I write as Pauline Mazurel, yes.
You may remember that one of Mazzy's pieces entitled Leftovers featured in our second issue, so if you haven't read that already, I would recommend you do, definitely. It's one of my favourites, if hypothetically I did have favourites. And here are some things that she said when I sort of asked her on the spot about it, which is maybe a bit mean, but she did tell us things nonetheless.
I think it's not, it doesn't span for, it doesn't sort of actually come from a personal anger of my own, but it was perhaps trying to express some of that vindictiveness that people feel when two lives split up and things get left behind, and what you do to process those things that are left behind from a relationship. And that may be as simple as a pile of change or just leftover CDs and music you don't want to listen to anymore. It probably spans from having watched Top Gear put various items in a blender at one time. And so it was just that natural connection with trying to make food then out of those leftovers and feed off it.
It was an interesting, a much more imaginative way of being vengeful.
And I wanted to try and make the punchline in a sense that actually the wronged party wasn't necessarily the one who was making such a creation about it all. I do particularly enjoy writing the very short
yeah.
story. But, I write to a more conventional sort of 2,000 word length as well. But, you know, for quite a long time I've enjoyed writing around about 150, 200 words. And
I like
to tell a story.
I think that's a good length. So, I mean, but like, do you have that in mind when you're writing them, or do you have to edit a lot out afterwards? How does that sort of...
I actually find it's best value if you've got somewhere around about 200, 300 words, and then you're editing down to 150, because at that stage you have to justify every single word.
Yeah.
And if it's not doing anything, it has to go, and it may get saved, not because it's doing something for the plot, but because it's an excellent word.
Yeah.
And you want to keep it there, but you do have to justify it to yourself to leave it in there.
Yeah, it makes sense. Do you get used to it now? Is it hard to edit to, you know, because I'm sure probably all of it's good, even if it doesn't all work for the whole thing. So is it hard to remove whole sentences or...?
Not so much, and often it's a case of slicing down the sentence and finding distilling it down to what's important. From that, I have a terrible tendency, you know, you start off by writing something with three adjectives where really one would have done, or indeed the right verb would have done in the first place.
But yes, so what would you like to share with us first?
Well, I'm going to start by reading another short piece, and it's called Wild Words.
Okay.
Sometimes I want to go where the words run feral, to corner them yapping and snarling in the street. Mow them down or be bitten, whichever comes first. I can't make that happen. It comes only by surprises, with raw barks risen from dry throats. It twists in the air from an awkward leap, and is swallowed into silence by air so cold that it takes each syllable and rings it out before birth. Watch the van round them up from the alleyways strung with fresh laundry. See them disappear one by one into steel cages, leaving only the trail on the pavement of mud from their paws. Somewhere else, out of sight, each one is precisely and humanely dispatched. But I should like to remember them wild, as they were, on the prowl, so to speak.
Do you have sort of a technique for writing, or does it come easy, because that's the worst sort of question?
I think what tends to happen is I start off writing various fragments, so I'll have an idea, something will inspire me. It may be a kind of a voice or a way of speaking, or it may be a particular subject. And then very often those starts or fragments will hang around for quite a long time before I go back to them. So it may be a case of either plastering two things together and seeing what happens, or developing on from a beginning to get some idea myself what a story is about. I think probably typically things have a fairly long product life cycle. Yeah. I'll start something, and it will probably take usually at least a year before it comes out to a stage where I'd be prepared to submit it anywhere.
Yeah.
Just because I think there's two phases, the actual creation phase and then a sort of editing and revising phase, where I go back and look at it perhaps with a slightly different brain, which is more an editorial or reading.
Do you enjoy writing? I know we're always supposed to say yes, but I mean, some people hate it, even though they do it, but they feel like they're compelled to sort of write these things, but they actually hate the process.
I think for me it is something I actually enjoy, in the same way that I enjoy gardening and weeding and moving plants around. I actually enjoy the physical act of moving words around and separating them by punctuation. And I get pleasure from that. I know storytellers who are actually natural storytellers who are very good at plotting and devising things, but probably find the whole act of sitting there and typing it out something of an agony.
Yeah.
So in a sense, they devise it all, they research it, and they find the writing bit very boring, and they hate that side of it. I assume that's less true for most poets, because they're actively interested in engaging with the words themselves.
Yeah.
So for me, yes, the actual medium is the exciting bit, I think.
Oh, that's good. I thought next we could do, I know you've got some more pieces, I'm going to call them pieces rather than poems. Or which one would you like to share with us first?
Well, I'm going to do something which is different, which is a more story-shaped story, perhaps.
Okay.
And this one's called Living Doll.
Okay.
She was a present from his best man. A coarse-skinned beanbag woman. Not deflatable like others. He groped her while his mates laughed, but couldn't install her in his newly wed IKEA furnished home. She went in the attic. His wife didn't mind, never needing to confront the rustling reality of the spineless 6'2" toy. When Julie left, he brought her down for company. Satisfying in a limited way. Quiet, but extremely well endowed to compensate for shyness. Then she developed her own interests. He'd find her wearing a saucily flipped up miniskirt, loading the washing machine with his work shirts trussed to tie-dye. Or posing as domestic goddess, fairy cakes aflame in oven. He slit her open, watched her cheeky independence leak away. Lentils trickled, splashed and bounced. He kissed her flabby lips and sat cradling the dead doll. For the first time since Julie left, he felt capable of crying.
That's interesting, because that's like another sort of people breaking up thing. But
I do apologise for bringing you lots of miserable stories about breakdowns.
Do you witness it, or is it just something, or are you sort of planning for it?
No, I can honestly say in my own defence that I actually got married last year, and I'm living extremely happily. I'm mostly processing everybody else's angst about relationships. Well, I was going to say, I mean, strangely actually, that story was originally called Living Doll. After the curry, and it came from a set of very short stories that I wrote, which were all based on really appallingly bad curry puns, of which my favourite is probably It's My Chapati and I'll cry if I want to.
That's new to me, I don't know.
And Shutting the Stable Door after the horse has balti. you get the measure of, and the idea was that these really terrible, terrible puns actually just inspired different stories. So I'd never, you know, considered before writing a story about a beanbag sex doll, but it came from the title.
Did you happen to bring any of the other curry stories?
Well, I've got a few more here. I do feel slightly responsible now for bringing you lots of really rather miserable stories about
it's my favourite kind.
Unsuccessful relationships. So, would you like an antidote to that?
Yes.
Okay, an antidote to that is called You Can't Curry Love. We spent that summer cocooned in a hammock slung in the brightest patch of sunshine. We fantasized about chicken chat nestling on fresh bed of salad with squeezes of lemon for added zest. We'd wrangle for hours over ordering merg or marsala, with sarg, brinjal or aloo gobi. Finally, after she'd almost tipped us out with tickling, we'd come to some agreement and begin to dream of Kulfi. We hardly ever got to dine. Dusk drew us too close to go inside, shower and change from shorts. Instead, we found our own gentle airborne way to work up a sweat beneath the stars. Afterwards, we fell asleep. Later, I'd wake, stomach rumbling, with netted patterns of rope impaled on backs of thighs, and her head cradled against my breast. That was my sweetest summer. I don't think I'll ever enjoy a meal as much as the ones we never ate.
Oh, that's a brilliant final line.
It's a little cheerier for once, I hope. I've still got those themes of food creeping in there, I'm afraid.
But yeah, I was going to ask, do you have sort of any influences? Because I obviously you must be a reader. I like to think you are. Everyone reads.
Everybody reads. I read voraciously as a child, and I've slowed down a bit since then. Well, I suppose one of the people who inspired me to actually feel that the short form was something that was worth doing was Margaret Atwood. She had a collection called Good Bones, and she subsequently had another one, I think, called The Tent. Of really very tiny pieces that sit on that borderline between prose poems, essays and stories. And it was the first time I'd ever really seen very, very tiny pieces like that together in a book and being accredited. You know, admittedly, she's Margaret Atwood and probably they would publish her shopping list if she put it forward, but that's not the point. It was there. Jim Crace as well wrote a book called The Devil's Larder, which similarly is... coincidentally, short pieces which have a food theme, you'll be unsurprised to learn. So it's always nice to know that there are other people out there, they're doing that, and I think flash fiction has got a much higher profile now, and there are a lot more people actually reading it and writing it.
Was there anything else you'd like to do? Otherwise, I was going to ask you about Heads and Tails.
I could say a bit about Heads and Tails. It's a storytelling group I belong to in Bristol, which is approximately where I hail from. And we do a variety of things. We do storytelling events around the southwest at various times. Some of my colleagues from the group have been at the Port Elliot Festival just recently, and I think they're off to Green Man in a few weeks' time, doing various things. And we've also produced some very location-specific audio stories recently, which are on our website, which I'm sure Sam will provide a helpful link to, so you can find that.
I was looking at them recently, actually. They are good, and we'll definitely check those out. How did you find each other, or your writerly people in Bristol?
Well, initially, met the founder of that group through, I did an MA in creative writing at Bar Spa University, and so a core of some of the members of that group were also in the same year as me, but other people have just got in touch with Ursula and joined the group as the years have gone on. It's formed organically over the last few years.
No, I love stuff like, you know how you think about, well maybe not anymore, but you used to think of writers as being sort of alone and doing their thing, but I love, you know, there's so many workshops and groups going on now, so it's kind of, it's much nicer when you do things with other people, I think.
Well, in the past, I have done a lot more collaborative work. I've enjoyed collaborating with other writers and artists, and it hasn't happened directly in terms of actually collaborating on an individual piece for quite a long time. But equally, it can be quite a difficult thing to do. Everybody romantically thinks, oh, yes, wouldn't it be wonderful? But actually, people have creative cycles that go up and down, and the worst thing in the world is if somebody's feeling very productive and somebody else is feeling a bit blocked, and they're being bombarded with ideas. And so if those two cycles aren't operating together, it can actually be extremely difficult, because one person is sitting there going, what is going on? I don't know what we're making anymore. Help. And somebody else is going, why aren't I getting anything back? So the dream ticket is it just becomes like a game of tennis and you keep batting things back across the net and something wonderful is being created. So at its best, it is extremely exciting and very productive. But
I think, yeah, probably covered everything. So yes, I'll definitely put a link up for audio stories and Heads and Tails. And yes, thank you again to Mazzy for coming in and sharing her words with us. Because it's nice to have something more, I don't know, prose poetry, just to shake things up a bit.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you.